Lord, we ask you to keep our minds open, our heads out of this meeting. Help us to stay focused and awake. We're so grateful for your gift. And we pray all this in your name. Amen.
Amen.
Hi, everybody. My name is Stevie B, and I'm an alcoholic.
Stevie B.
And I'm a proud member of the West Side Men's Group.
Nice.
And it's so great to be here with you guys tonight. And, you know, God just has a way to surprise me all the time. And I was on my way over here tonight, I said to Sandy, "No, Sandy, I don't think anyone's showing up tonight." And I just said that to Mason on the way in. I said, "Mason, don't get disappointed, because he's my biggest fan, and we just love each other." And I'm like, "Mason, don't get disappointed. There's not going to be a lot of people here." Because a bunch of people text messaged me, and the Oteros told me they weren't coming, and then they fooled me, and then they just snuck in at the end. And so, you know, I thought it was going to be me, Earl, Sandy, and Mason. And of course I knew the Boca guys were coming down, Mark and Maciel and Eddie and Patricia, my dance guru friends and my mentors in sobriety. So this is about it. The train, we've had a great 72 weeks. It's been wonderful. A great step series. If you're here for the first time tonight, I'm saying welcome, and you came at a perfect time. We're talking about God tonight, and we're going to be talking about seeking God and prayer and meditation, getting closer to God. Uh-oh. We're going to talk about some of the ways that the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about how to get closer to God. We're also going to talk about some of the ways that Steve, right here, your humble servant, gets closer to God. And then I'm also going to explain some of the ways that I keep God away. And how I take over my own reins, and how I run my own show. And the results is always the same exact when I try to do that. That's right, Dale, it's a disaster, absolutely. I forgot that you always do the last word. Sorry. I love that. I've missed that. I have truly, truly missed that. It's been such a great time for me here at the Fourth Dimension Clubhouse, being here with Richie and Emilio, and then I had a friend tonight come and ask me to speak. And he was just so integral in his kindness to me when I was in a treatment center. You see, you never know when just a kind word. And I got teary-eyed when I saw him tonight, and I'm getting teary-eyed now. You never know when a kind word to someone that's just starting out will always leave an indelible mark upon your soul. So, although some of my sponsees aren't, where are my sponsees? Mike, you know, although I abuse you guys sometimes. I want to tell you that men inside this clubhouse, and women inside this clubhouse, were there when I got off that bus. And they said, "Welcome back, Steve." And there's nothing like that. If this is your first time in sobriety, you never have to feel that way. You never have to feel like, wow, I have to come back. But if you're like me, and you had to come back, and a lot of us do, you know, because we come in, we pick up one white chip, we read some type of book, and other than the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we think, well, I'm not even thinking about drinking anymore. I'm not even thinking about drugging anymore. I'm good. You know, you might even go to a restaurant or a bar, and people are drinking around you. It doesn't even faze you. You're like, it doesn't even faze me, drinking and drugging. That was so passé. That was like so last year. And let me tell you, if you're not an alcoholic or an addict, you can read a great book and become a different person and never pick up another pill or drink or anything. But if you are an alcoholic of my sorts, this will be a lifelong, every day, one day at a time for the rest of my life endeavor. I will never have attained, I will never get to a place where it's easy sailing from here. And just when I think I've got it, just when I think that I've now figured out, not figured out God, because that would be ridiculous. I never think that I know a little bit about God, and I study about God every single day, but the idea that anyone thinks that they know who God is, or everything about God, is just, to me, sounds ridiculous. Because the same brain that wants to create this God that I can fit inside my brain box is the same guy that can't figure out algebra or calculus or sales tax or tax. I don't want to be able to figure out the creator of the universe. If that's the God of the universe, that's going to be a very small and finite God. What I do know is that God will not make hard terms for those that seek Him. That when we seek Him, He's not looking to hide from us. That when we seek, we will find. That when we say simple prayers like, God, reveal yourself to me, He will. That you can go from the uttermost, lowest despair in your life, where you're served in a treatment center with a restraining order. Eileen calls me into the office and she says to me, Steve, I got good news and I got bad news. The good news is your family has paid 7 weeks for you to be here in the treatment center. The bad news is your wife just served you with a restraining order and I have it in my desk right here. Now, I met my beautiful wife in sobriety. We had an AA wedding. Ice carvings and sculptures and a guy playing a flamenco guitar and a cigar roller. With a hat. The guy had a hat and he was rolling cigars and people were smoking cigars. And it was a wedding of my dreams. We had fondue fountains and a Haagen-Dazs station. And I practiced my dancing and we had this dance that was orchestrated. My wife looked like, if you've ever been to my store in the swap shop and see a picture of my wife in her wedding gown, it's Princess Diana, but Diana had nothing on her. And my whole family was there, and people came in from California. My first treatment center, the director now lived in California. He flew in from California. My first sponsor from New York flew in. My sponsor down here was there. My parents, people came in from Minnesota where I sobered up in 1993. The whole place converged. It was 250 people. Sandy's family from Columbia came in, and it was magical. And 2 years later, I was on SysDrunk after having robbed our store, after having destroyed our house, after having spent every dime in our bank account. I was on SysDrunk Boulevard with a guy that I had just pulled over on the side of the road, and I said, do you know where I can score some super alcohol? And he said, yeah, and he got into my car, and we went and we robbed my store. That's 2 years later. See, my wife didn't sign up for that. She didn't sign up for that one. The flamenco guitar and the ice sculptures and the Haagen-Dazs, that didn't pay for that, I can tell you that. What my wife signed up for was a sober man in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was a sober man when I married her. But something happened when I went on my honeymoon. And we were sitting there, and I'm not saying the honeymoon did it. I had already been falling apart at the seams. And those of you that know me know that that's pretty easy for me to fall apart at the seams. But see, what I do is when I fall apart on the seams is I double up on my meetings. See, now I realize I have alcoholism. Today, I have alcoholism. I don't have alcohol 7 years ago. I don't have alcohol 15 years ago. I came into the program when I'm 25. I'm now 42. It's not something that I suffered from when I was 25. I have alcohol today, alcoholism today. Now, I don't have anything in my system to make me powerless over alcohol and drugs, but I certainly am powerless over the disease of alcoholism. And I don't want to forget that. So when I was marrying my wife and we were setting up our honeymoon plans, we decided to go to a casino and then we're going to go off to New Orleans. That's my best thinking, New Orleans for an alcoholic to go on his honeymoon. I decide, you know, we're going to go to New Orleans, and we're going to have a sober honeymoon. It's going to be fantastic. I mean, I had 4 years of sobriety. I had 4 years of sobriety. And I thought to myself, I've been doing this for 4 years, and everything's fine. And while we were on that, I looked over, and we were sitting in, this is before Emeril Lagasse, the whole world knew him. But Emeril Lagasse back then, not everybody knew him. New Orleans knew him, because he was from there. He's a famous chef. And I'm sitting in the restaurant at Lola's. We had reservations, and next to me was a guy, and he was pouring out a wine in a decanter, and then they were letting it breathe on the table. And they had this breathing decanter on the table. And I looked over at that. I looked over, and I knew this thing had to be maybe $150, red wine. And I saw myself being a fine wine drinker. Now, I got to be honest with you. I'm not sure if I ever drank anything other than... I don't think I ever drank a red wine that I liked. other than stuff that was sweet, like Mad Dog 2020 and Manischewitz, because I come from half Jewish, half Italian home, so we had Manischewitz, and I don't think I've ever really met a red wine that I liked. But at that time, because alcoholism was starting to seep into my mind, I saw the red wine and I thought to myself, you know, if you let red wine breathe long enough on a table, you could drink red wine and not be an alcoholic. And that thought was placed in my head. I was 29 years old, and I had 4 years of sobriety, and I already had the woman of my dreams. My job was good. We just were about to buy a house. My family, I had respect in the community, and I thought to myself, the only thing that could make this life better would be a glass of wine. Now, why do I tell you that story? That's alcoholism. The big book tells about us a gentleman that retires, and then he's got, you know, forever sobriety, he's been sober forever, and then he puts on his, I think they call it his, he puts on his, what is this, smoking slippers? What is it? Is it called? Is it smoke? He put on his slippers and his smoking jacket, and he drinks himself to death because he thought that after he had attained what he attained and he retired and he had set everybody up in business and his bank account was full and he'd been sober for years and years and years, that putting on his slippers and having a cocktail in the house, that it wouldn't set off alcoholism. It'll always set off alcoholism, only if you have the disease. You see, and I know a lot of people that talk about the disease like it's some type of, it's something out there. They don't really understand the concept of the disease of alcoholism. But my sponsor said to me, and I know that this is going to be a story that most of you that have been through the series have heard over and over and over again, but I need to remind the people that are here for the first time. My sponsor said to me, the disease of alcoholism is not a flat-footed cop that walks around the streets of New York with a donut in one hand and a cup of coffee in the other. The disease of alcoholism is like a Secret Service agent that walks in and out of parties unnoticed, that wears $1,000 suits, that knows how to speak every language, that knows every weapon in the arsenal. And if you have any respect for your sobriety, you better have that much more respect for the disease of alcoholism. And when he told me about that, I understood that this is not something to be played with. That when Carl Jung told Roland Hazard that once in a while, here and there, that there will be some people that will have had a great change and they will be able to stay sober. I want to be the here and there once in a while guy. I don't take this thing like this is going to be like, what are you doing? Would you rather go to the game or would you like to go to AA? I get to go to the game only if I go to AA. And where's Robbie? And listen, when I have a problem, I call you. I don't call Dwayne Wade. So I'm going to make sure that I'm here in the meeting when the stuff is going on. I'm accountable to you guys. This is my life. And the only reason, where's Jason Onishek? Is Jay over here?
Yeah,
is he still here? The only reason that we get to do this, and Jason will tell you, the only reason we get to do the other stuff, the only reason we get to do the other stuff is if we do this. This is not one from column A and one of column B. You get to do this first, and then you can have everything else. So when they told me that in order to be able to keep this type of vigor and energy going, because I've been like this for 8 years, guys. The first 6 months was really rough. Richie will tell you, really rough. When I met Roger, really rough. I was hanging on. When I started to live with Eddie and Mason, I had a bucket of pills that they had prescribed me, a bucket of medication, one to make me go to sleep, one to make me stay calm, one just in case that didn't work. I had a whole bucket of pills. They had diagnosed me bipolar. They put me through this testing called the MMPI, the Minnesota testing thing. They said, you are definitely bipolar, you definitely have issues, and you definitely need to be on medication. And then the doctor said to me this. She said, and it's probably going to be for the rest of your life. And when I met these guys, I was on medication, and I carried around my bucket of pills because I knew that these junkies that I was living with, even though my stuff was non-narcotic, they'd probably still try to get some of it. So I put it in a Tupperware container, an oblong Tupperware container, and I carried it everywhere like Linus and his blanket. Because I knew living with those DGs that those guys were going to try to take my stuff. And I kept it and I walked around with it and I lived with that bottle of, with that thing of pills. And you know, when I was 3.5 years sober, I was sitting with Denise. And I said to Denise, I feel that God is telling me to get off these pills. And she said to me, and that when I say stuff like God's telling me, I don't mean that he audibly showed up in the house and that one of the pictures in my wall started burning and then it says, you should get off pills. Not like that. I see through prayer and meditation, but I'm not wacko, you know? So I felt that he was telling me that this was the time. I had done the work I needed to do. I was doing, you know, 6 meetings a week. We were going everywhere. I was following Russell around town, and I was doing everything that I possibly could. A lot of the behaviors that I came up with were gone. I was already sponsoring a bunch of men. And I went there, and I said, listen, I think that this is the time for me to step out. And I stepped out. And then the next time I went to see her, because you got to do a follow-up visit, I said to her, and now I believe that my goal in life, my mission is in life, is to go around to treatment centers and let people know that inside AA, that you can fail, you can be diagnosed bipolar, you can, all these things that I had that I thought I was terminally unique. And I'm looking around the room and I see some other people that understand what I mean. That I was so broken and so messed up and I was so labeled and I couldn't even get, there was a person that came over to the house and we wanted to get life insurance and I was turned down in my house for life insurance. That's hard to be turned down for life insurance when you're like 38, you know what I mean, to be turned down for life insurance. Not even, I wasn't even 30, I was like 35. I got turned down for life insurance when I'm 35. The guy's like, no, I don't think you'd be a good risk. 35, no life insurance. Non-smoker, that's right, non-smoker. I was thinner then, and he's like, no, with your past, it's better if you wait. But what if I die in the meantime? No, you should wait. And I say to this wonderful woman named Denise, I said, well, you know what, I have a feeling, I have a vision, I have a calling that I believe that I want to go into treatment centers. And I want to let people know that they don't have to be embarrassed about being a seeker of God. And that there's nothing embarrassing about wanting to be closer to him. And I want to let people know right when they're in treatment center. I don't want any watered down stuff coming through, and I want to be a speaker that goes into treatment center. And she thought that was great. She's like, that's great. You should do that. So I called Mason, and I said, there's this one treatment center in town, and it's across town, it's on right off of David Boulevard, and I think that I should go there, and I should tell them what my vision is. So I did. So one day we parked in front of the treatment center, and we went in there, and I showed up, and I went to the front door, and I said to the people there, I said, my name is Stevie B, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'd like to come in and talk to your residents, and tell them about another way of life. That it's okay to seek God, and it's okay to love the Lord, and it's okay to do all this. And she said to me, what are your qualifications? Where are you coming from? I said, no, I'm from AA. And she's like, oh, okay, well, I'll write it down. She's like, write it down. She wrote me down on the pad. You know, like I was a wacko, like with the guys with the selling the stuff on the streets. And we never heard anything back. I came out, I told, this is not good, May. I mean, she looked at me like I was a wacko. She's like, and who sent you? I'm like, he sent me. Yeah, that goes over real big at the treatment center. I gotta tell you. And how will this benefit us? I'm not sure, but I think he sent me. So I'm gonna leave you hanging on that part of the story because I need to get back to that part of the story. I wanna just leave you that. I left there, came out to Mason, no call. It was like one of those bad dates. It was like no call. And I realized I had went there on my own power. I had a vision and I had a calling and I knew that I wanted to do what I wanted to do this mission in life. But I kind of went there on my own power. I didn't seek his direction. You see, the 11th step says that we seek through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. Well, as long as we're seeking and we're improving, everything will be opened up to us. But just knowing God is not enough in the 11th step. Because, let me be honest with you, everybody knows God. Some people deny God. Some people don't believe them in exactly the way we believe. Some people call him something else. But everybody, and I believe in the big book where it says that in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental belief that there is a God. Dale and I work together in team. We go around and we help each other. And it's a fundamental belief system that there is a God. So that's not enough in the 11th step. We actually have to be in relationship with him, like Mark and I are in relationship. Last night we had a little disagreement, our first disagreement ever in our relationship. We've been friends 2 years. We had a disagreement that got heated. I took back my own will. I didn't listen to him. I wanted to tell him how right I was. And you know, alcoholics, when they want to tell you how right they're, they don't care. I want you to know you're so right, I want to kill you while I'm telling you. I want you to die and listen at the same time. So I was stepping over his words, and I'm interrupting him while he's speaking, and I got steam coming out of my ears, and I'm like, I can't believe, in my mind, I'm thinking, I can't believe how wrong you could possibly be. Now, I didn't say exactly that, but I was, you know, and then we both got up from the table, and then Mark came over to me, and we hugged, and we talked about it. I made my amends. We did what we do. We're in salsa class together, so we kissed each other on the cheeks. It's part of salsa. But I'm in a relationship with Mark. It's not like I just met him at an AA meeting and we just started having a disagreement. If I meet you at an AA meeting and the moment we meet, we have a disagreement, I'm probably going to walk away. And just leave. I'm like, that guy's a wacko. Yeah, he's a wacko. Not that that's spiritual, but that's my nature. But because we're in relationship, we had something at stake, and I didn't want to lose that relationship. In order to seek through prayer and meditation to improve a conscious contact with God, you actually have to have a relationship with God. You can't just show up in the emergency times, God, I'm here. You created me. Fix this. That's not a relationship. That's like a sponsor. And God is much more than that. You see, in order to improve on a conscious contact with God, you got to at least have made conscious contact with Him. And for those of you that are praying on your backs and praying in your sleep, I heard one sponsor tell me he prays in his sleep. That's dreaming. That's not prayer. That's dreaming. I do a lot of things in my sleep. A lot of it what I would be arrested for. I'm talking about praying. In order to improve, you have to be conscious. Yes. Am I right?
That helps.
And while you're conscious, you have to seek. Show yourself to me. Reveal yourself to me. You know, one of the most powerful shares that has ever happened to me in recent times is a friend of mine from Alcoholics Anonymous. He said that he was on tour and he was singing music and this lady came up to him and said, "Do you believe in God?" He said, "Of course I believe in God." He said, "Then why don't you ask him to reveal himself to you?" Wow. What a concept. If there is a God and he is a loving father, which is what I believe and what the big book says that he is, that it says your loving father will never let you down. If he's a loving father and he'll never let you down, how many loving fathers, if you go to him and say, "Reveal yourself to me," he turns his back on us. Zero. Now, are we going to go through terrible times? Some of us have went through the worst times in our lives. Some of us in this room have went through things that nobody else could possibly have ever gone through. It's not like he doesn't know about it. He still will make a way for us to have, even though it doesn't seem like it's possible, a life beyond our wildest dreams. Rather. Whatever we're going through, He's already made a way out. And I mean, whatever. And some people say in this way, "You don't know what I've been through." Believe me, I know what you've been. I don't know exactly your things, but I've heard a bunch of stuff. And I know that He knows what you've been through. So which brought us how we ended the 11th step last week, which tonight would have been the 12th step. But there was so much more to talk about it, so we're going to do another week next week. If that's okay. I'm going to tell you, that's not the way it should work. You ask permission first, then you make the announcement. But I asked permission before tonight. And I thank you to this group for allowing me to go one more
week.
Thank
you.
So last week we ended with the 11-step prayer, but you can't end with the 11-step prayer. You can't just leave the 11-step prayer and then walk out of the room and say, here we go, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, as the result of these steps, and just go into 12. If you don't explain 11, if you don't understand how powerful the 11-step prayer is, if you don't have this prayer memorized, write it in a little thing in your pocket, put it in your pocket, put it in your wallet, and then look at it. Look at it when the guy that you're closest friends with or the girl you're closest friends with does something that you can't believe, and you're like, you know what, I'm going to throw that relationship away, and then you get to that one line where it says, to be understanding rather than to be understood. Because yesterday I was thinking my wife was totally, wasn't being nice to me. She wasn't being nice. I don't know the adult word to say that, so I just revert right back to child. She was being mean to me. My wife was being mean to me. And I was like, you know what? I'm not going to talk to her. I'm gonna give her an alcoholic. I'm not going to talk to her. And then I went to the 11th step. To be understanding rather. Oh, and I wasn't going to come to the deal last night. I wasn't going to come up on Friday night because I felt she was not listening to me. And then I was walking to the car and I was like, and you know what? For those of you that have been on this series for us, you know that on Friday nights I have dance class with these guys. And dance class has not been easy for me, Maciel. You admit, it's been really, really a hard thing getting those two left feet and the two shoes that don't match to go boom, boom. It's been hard. But last night I decided to be understanding rather than to be understood, didn't I? And I walked into that dance class last night. I just threw myself into it. I said, you know what, tonight I'm going to salsa myself. And I just started throwing myself around that salsa class. And you know what, I had the best salsa class last night. And it had everything to do with the 11th step. Lord, make me a channel of thy peace. That where there is hatred, I may bring love. That where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness. That where there is discord, I may bring harmony. That where there is error, I may bring truth. That where there is doubt, I may bring faith. That where there is despair, I may bring hope. That where there is shadows, I may bring light. That where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather than to comfort rather than to be comforted. To understand rather than to be understood. That's the line right there. Listen, that one line right there will keep us serene in the most horrible situations. Because most of our problems today are from a lack of understanding or a lack of compassion or wanting to be understood and wanting other people to understand that we need to be understood and smashing people along the way to understand that they need to understand that they need to be understood. And you could drive yourself like crazy. You could be like, you know, beautiful mind. You could drive yourself crazy like that. Where if you just cut to the chase, you know what, I just need to be understanding rather than to be understood, Lawrence. All of a sudden, boom, they win. Listen to this. Boom. They win, and you get the serenity. Win-win. Where's Joe? Becomes a win-win. All of a sudden, your whole life you've been playing, it's either win-lose or lose-win, and you find out it could be a win-win. I need to follow God. I want to get closer to Him, and I don't want to be in discord with you. So right now, I'm going to try to be understanding rather than to be understood. And that's what I wasn't doing last night. And that's why I got myself all in a tizzy. Because when I want to be understood, rather than be understanding, it's messy. And then, thank God, there's a 10th step. And then you got to go do it. And then you got to be, you know, promptly admit that you're wrong. And who wants to do a 10th step anyway? Promptly admit when I'm wrong. And then I got to go back and I got to make amends to the wives and to the fiancés and to my wife. And I'm in the car alone with her for 30 minutes after the incident last night. It's just, you know, you cut so much stuff out of your life when you don't create wreckage in your present. And that's easier said than done. We had the speaker, I'm not even going to go there, but yeah, I'm not even going to go there. Let me just say, if you're one of these guys or gals that speak from the podium and say you found eternal bliss and you found perfect serenity, and you've mastered the art of perfection of your word, and you have come to a place of peace of the universe, let me tell you, you do not have alcoholism. You don't. You have another thing. You have maybe a Tony Robbins seminar, but you don't have alcoholism. Because that too will pass. That pink cloud that you just read, the most amazing book you've ever read, you know, and it is the 7 habits of a highly effective spiritual giant, and you read it and it's right there and it's on the forefront of you. That's until you get into traffic. I mean, if you have alcoholism, that's what I'm saying. I mean, Tony gave me this book last week, The Practice of, what is it, Tony? Practice of the Presence of God by Brother Lawrence. And when Tony O, who a guy that I just respect so much, gives you a book and says, read it, you do it. You know, you read it. You open it up because not only am I open-minded, but I certainly want to be following guys that I respect, guys and gals that I respect, and I want to see what they do. And I certainly don't want to say, that's not for me, or that's not my faith, or I don't believe in any of that and stuff. So I started reading it. And let me tell you, second chapter in, always being in communion with God, always talking to God, that when you're in prayer time, that prayer time is no different than any other time during the day, that you should always be talking to God, you should always be seeking God. You wake up in the morning, you check in with God, you continue to talk with God, you're with Him, God, the whole day. You continue to be with Him. When you go to prayer time, it's just another time to talk to God. When I was reading that book, I was in it. But that was before I got up out of bed. And when I got up and I made a cup of coffee, then I talked to my wife and she gave me a couple honeydews to do, and then I went to work. I was trying to talk with God, but I was also trying to talk with sponsees, and I was trying to talk with customers, and I was trying to talk with the bank, and it's not easy. Seeking through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God implies one thing, that seeking will be the idea, and improving will be fantastic, but it always is going to be a one step forward, maybe a half step back, maybe 2 steps forward. Half step back. For me, in the last couple days, it's been 2 steps forward and really 2 steps back. But the 2 steps when I took a step back, I said it was good for me because I found out that another thing that I could share with God in my 6 and 7, where I humbly asked Him to remove my shortcomings, is that I'm not a good listener. I'm not a good listener, especially if I don't agree with your opinion. Dale will tell you. If I don't agree with your opinion, I'm the worst listener. Because I need to let you know quick how I don't want to hear what you have to say. And guess who's going to be able to change that in me? It's only going to be humbly asked Him to remove that shortcoming. So when I take 2 steps forward in seeking and then I got to take 2 steps back, you know what I do in the 2 steps back? I sit down and I read about something that either in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous or in a spiritual book like Tony told me about. The practice of the presence of God. The whole program, the whole thing, once you get past the half of the first part of the first step, which is staying away from the drink or the drug, that's only the half of the part of the first step. Once you get past there, the whole thing is practicing the presence of God. And some days it's going to be an incredible day. Some days you're going to walk off the mountain, you're going to be carrying both tablets, and you're going to tell people how they can get to the promised land. And other days you're going to be like, I am a spiritual moron. And I hate myself. And on those days, as well as the days when you come down with the tablets and you're letting people how to know to get to the promised land, you better have a support group in place that knows how not great, not perfect you are. Or like our friend Spike likes to say, John, wacko. But I don't think that's a technical term, Marty. Is that a technical term, wacko? I'm not sure. But he likes to say that we're all wacko. And you know what? We all are. We all come in here with our broken toys. We all come over here with a set of ideas that didn't work for our parents, that passed it down to us, and still doesn't work with us. And then we come in here, we add booze and other stuff to it, and then it's all messed up. And then slowly, sometimes 23 years, sometimes 28 years, sometimes 39 years, sometimes 2 years, sometimes 9 years, 8 years, 8 years coming up on 9. we untangle one of the hangers that are in that big mess that we come in here with. But I'm going to tell you how we never untangle them. We never untangle them on our own. I've never worked on getting patient and it's ever worked. I've never tried harder not to hit someone and it never happened. It never happened. Every time that I tried not to hit someone, I always hit somebody. Every time that I tried not to curse, I cursed. I even cursed worse when I tried not to curse. And when I said, listen, I'm going to start this effing day without cursing, it was worse. In my prayers, I was cursing. But when I said to God, could you come inside me and change me from the inside out? And could you help me not to do those things? He was all too ready and all too excited to get involved in my life. You know, I'm looking at a father and son that are sitting over there on the side of the wall, and my dad was coming in here with me when they were down here, and now they're in Long Island. And I'm going to tell you something. When I go to my dad with my broken stuff, my dad is all too excited to help me with my stuff. Today. I'm not talking about that's the way I grew up. I definitely did not grow up in Leave It to Me Beaver type of house. But today, because we're both in the program, and we both are following him, if I come with a whole bunch of set of stuff, my dad will help me one hanger at a time to help me with that mess. And our Father is exactly the same way. Listen to this line. It is by forgiving that one is forgiven. It is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. It is better to love than to be loved. Listen to this line. It is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. You know what that means? That it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life? It means it's by you admitting that you've lost. I can't do this. I can't work on patience. I can't work on forgiveness. I can't work on loving people that I don't like. I can't do any of that. If I die to myself, he can come in, change me from the inside. That's what that line means. It's by dying that one awakens to eternal life. I want to ask you a question. How many people in here, inside this room, feels like we woke to eternal life inside Alcoholics Anonymous? I know I did. I feel I woke up to eternal life. When I first met Roger at a Bikers in Recovery meeting, and I was so broken. Richie takes me up to this meeting. Was it in this clubhouse that we came here 9 years ago? They were stomping on the floor doing How It Works. Boom! I was so whacked out. I said, all I want, God. Well, what is it that they stomp on the floor, Roger? When is it like... Master be smashed. I was. I mean, I was like 6 days off, you know, off narcotics, and they were like, "Hey," and I was like, "Yeah." And I thought, all I ever wanted, and all I've asked for, and I told Sandy this when I finally got sober. What I mean by finally got sober is that I'll tell you. I'm going to tell you now. We really need like 12 more weeks, you know, to cover all this up. We're still in the same part of the 11th step from last week.
11 3/4.
When I knew I was really sober was this. My sponsor said to me, I want you to be on your knees in the morning and I want you to be on your knees at night. And I said to him, Jerry, listen, I'm Catholic. The only time we do that is in church. We don't do that in our house. And Jerry said to me, don't give me any of that. Because, why I pulled that Trump card on with him is because he's Jewish. So I figured, you know, he couldn't trump me on that because he doesn't know about Catholicism. So I was like, Jerry, we don't do that in Catholicism. You know, I was giving him the alky reasoning why we can't do something. I said, Jerry, Catholics, we only do that in church where there's pews. And Jerry said to me, don't give me any of that junky reasoning. You want to stay sober? And I said, I do. He says, you'll get on your knees in the morning and you'll ask God to keep you sober. And at night, you'll say thank you to him. And I said, okay. And he told me the story that I've shared with you guys hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times. But it's still an incredible story. That if I invited you over one day into my house over for Thanksgiving dinner, and you grabbed the food and you didn't say please, and then you walked out of my house and you didn't say thank you, do you think I'd ever invite you back over to my house for Thanksgiving dinner again? And I said, Jerry, no, I don't think so. He said, so why do you think you should be in God's world one day with being sober and not say please in the morning and not say thank you at night? And I love food, and I wanted to be invited back. So I said, okay, I'm going to do it. And in my 6 month of sobriety, my friend Danny calls me, and I'm on a plane over to do my fifth step in San Francisco, and I'm in Houston, and I'm on the ground, and I'm in a layover. But I'm in first class in a layover in a plane because our friend Todd, his father works for the plane industry, and he got me first class tickets. And I'm sitting there, and I decide to pick up the phone, and I call back east. No, I call, and I get my messages, and Myron says, call me now. And my wife says to me in tears, call me now. And I find out while I'm on my way over that my best friend in Alcoholics Anonymous dies from going in for stomach surgery. The day before, he called me, and I was too busy to answer the phone. It was like in the beginning of caller ID, and I was too busy to answer the phone. Because Danny was always whining, and was always whining about not feeling well. And those of you who know that I'm not great about hearing about whining, I was like, come on, stop whining. And he dies the next day. I didn't ever get to pick up the phone for him. And I'm sitting there all in terrible shape, and I'm crying, and I show up in California, and I'm all out of sorts. And then 2 weeks later, my grandmother, the light of my life, dies. And I'm 6 months sober, and I'm in a different state, and I'm in an airport, which I love to drink in an airport, Eddie. I love airports. I become a pirate in an airport. I'm like, I become a different person, you know. What do you do? Oh, I'm a pirate. I make up the stories, you know. I go to a different wing, and I just become a different person. So I was thinking to myself, this would be a perfect time to get drunk. People are dying all around me. People that I love. And I'm not in my state. You know what I mean? I'm not going to get drunk in Florida, but I'm in Houston. And then I was in California. And I'm only 6 months sober. And I feel, Tony, the presence of God. And I feel He's with me. And I feel I'm not alone. And my sponsor says to me when I get there, you don't honor Danny's death by drinking. You don't honor your grandmother's death by drinking. We don't honor anybody in Alcoholics Anonymous by doing the stuff that got us in here. What you do to honor them is you stay sober one day at a time. And so how did I know I was sober? Because I was 9 months sober and my wife invites me to come back and live in the house. And I'm packing my stuff and Mason was helping me and Todd, who usually sits here, did not help me. Just to let you know that I remember that from 8 years ago. But Mason and Eddie did. And I'm packing up my stuff in my car, and I'm driving back to Hollywood to my wife's house, to our house. And it's my first night in the house, and I wake up in the morning, and there's coffee brewing, and I'm just loving God, and I'm loving that I'm in the house. And I just got down on my knees, and I said to God, thank you for bringing me back here. A house that I was thrown out of, a house that I didn't have a key to. And I'm in the house, and I'm just all full of gratitude. And I decide, because my wife, as you can tell, she's very thin, and I'm not. I decide to turn over the mattress so that her side of the mattress is on my side of the mattress and my side of the mattress is on her side of the mattress and it wouldn't be so lumpy. And I turn over the mattress and it turns out that the drugs and the paraphernalia that I used to use in a blackout, I hid them in the bed in between the mattress and the box spring. And I like to say, and I like to make it very dramatic, that it wasn't just me that time, it was me and God, but... I don't want to get into the drama part of that. If you want real drama, we're going to be at, where are we going to be at tomorrow morning? The DA meeting. The DA meeting in Dania at 10 a.m. If you're not at church tomorrow, DA means it's dual addicted. We'll be able to talk about anything. We're going to get raw. It's going to be 10 a.m. in the morning. I'm going to be talking about stuff that I did and stuff that I wish I would have shot when I was out there, all that kind of nonsense. I say that because I never shot anything, but I'm just going to get raw tomorrow morning. Yeah, this is what I did. Ah. They can't throw you out. And I turn over the mattress, and there's the drugs, and there's the paraphernalia. And my wife is downstairs, and she's cooking breakfast. And I will say that the first time in my life that I knew that I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, really in Alcoholics Anonymous, is because I called Sandy downstairs, and I knew I was really sober because I finally had, through him, the power to call her, and we flushed everything down the toilet and threw stuff in it. And when you get to that point, when you know that you're the real deal, when you know that you've really surrendered, is when you can go on. Before that time, you almost don't know if you're real. You see, there become a time in Alcoholics Anonymous when you're sobriety, when there's only between you and your stuff is you and him. And when you show up in integrity when no one else is watching, that's when you know you're the real deal. And see, I looked at the stuff and I cried and Sandy cried and we took it all together and I knew I'm in. I am really in. And then I continued to seek and I continued to show up. I couldn't get into that treatment center. I couldn't get into that treatment center. Nobody wanted me to come in that treatment center. And then that same lady, Denise, I went to see her and she says, you know, there's a young man that I think you'd be perfect sponsoring. Because this young man needs your type of health. help, and he can't get help. His father's a pastor. He can't get help. He can't get sober, and I think you'd be a perfect guy for him. And the kid never called me. But I go and I speak in Bark that week. And while I'm speaking in Bark, like we do every other Tuesday, now Doug's taking that commitment from me. We go every other Tuesday. We've been taking that for 6 years. We bring a meeting into Bark, 10 a.m. in the morning on Tuesdays. I go home, and I'm at home, and my phone rings, and it's this kid, Michael. And he says, man, I need help. And I'm in Bark. And I said, I just spoke in Bark. And he goes, that was you? I said, that was me. He goes, I was the kid that was nodding out in the back. I go, I saw you. I saw you. You see, and it turns out that that kid's father, that treatment center that didn't want to know from me, that kid's father, they wanted to know that kid's father. And somehow, how God works it out, they had a meeting with that young man's father. And the young man's father knew me, and he said, I'd like you to meet my son's sponsor. I couldn't get in the treatment center. The director didn't want to meet me. I have no qualifications. I have nothing that they wanted. But that pastor wanted that treatment center director owner to meet me. So I'm at breakfast, at this breakfast, and the pastor says to the guy, this is Stevie B, and he wants to take a meeting into your treatment center. I'm like, yeah, and I've been leaving my name and my message in your place for the last 2 months. And as people do when they're at breakfast, they're like, oh, yeah, I was going to get back in touch with you. And so he says to me, I want you to take a meeting in there on a night that I couldn't. I said, I'm sorry. The only night that I can take a meeting in there is on Mondays. He said, I'm sorry. That's not going to work out. And then he calls me back and he says, listen, I'd like you to take a meeting on there on Mondays at 8 o'clock or at 7 o'clock. And I said, I'm sorry. The only time I have in the entire week, because every night is booked, because I go to meetings every night. And I have a commitment at every meeting. That's what we do. He said, that's not going to work out for me. And I said, I'm sorry, I can only do it at 8 o'clock. He said, that's not going to work out for us, but thank you anyway. And the next week he calls up, he says, can you start? What did he say to us, Mason? Can you start tonight? Absolutely. And we started taking that meeting there in the treatment center, and I started taking the meeting there, and every Monday night, and that's where I met Doug. And then every Monday night, and that's where I met Danny, who's not here, who's in Boston right now visiting his family. That he was able to stay sober a year and a half in sobriety while his father drowned in the Boston Harbor during July 4th weekend. And I was able to be in his life, and we were able to be together. And then I met Justin, who's not here tonight because he's taking a meeting into a treatment center for adolescents. Half my guys aren't here tonight because they're doing service tonight. And I got to keep taking the meeting in, and then that guy went and owned another treatment center, invited me over to that treatment center. He said, can you do your magic over here on a night that, and I said, I can't do it that night. He says, okay, just come when you can. And then I met Joshua there. And then I met you ladies in the back there. And see, if you seek through prayer and meditation to improve your conscious contact with God, the whole world gets opened up for you. But if you stay limited in your own conversations and this is all I can do and I have no qualifications, you know what? None of us have qualifications. We're all a bunch of mental patients. But hooked onto the power of the universe, doors open up. And we continue to do it, and then we wanted to open up a meeting outside of Alcoholics Anonymous where we weren't afraid to talk about the Bible and different stuff like that. And we opened up this little meeting in St. Francis on Wednesday nights. And then some invited us to go to a church. And now on a Wednesday night, we have over 200 people. And a lot of you guys come. And see, because I don't believe that there's any limitations on his power. And see, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says this. And then we're going to end. Thank you, brother. And I'm sorry we're going over a little bit, but it's just, you know, this is just very important. Very important. It says, on awakening, let us think about the 24 hours a day ahead. And it says, get on our knees and ask God to come into our life and direct our thinking. And then it says, we follow that period of meditation with some prayers. Brothers and sisters, don't be afraid of prayers. You know what I know about God fits in the thimble. So if everything that I know about God fits in the thimble, that means what during prayer, he can reveal so much more to me. And it says, if you don't know some set prayers, memorize some set prayers. If you don't know a set prayer, memorize a set prayer. Use the Lord's Prayer. Or use the 11-step prayer. Or listen to this prayer that I use. And this is not a Christian prayer. Actually, this prayer is from Pulp Fiction, if you could imagine. I got this prayer from Pulp Fiction. I knew for all you mockers and scoffers out there, you'd be okay with it as long as I mention Pulp Fiction. Listen to this prayer that I use in emergency situations. Sean, you're going to love this. This is the 23rd Psalm. King David used this when he was being pursued by an army that wanted to devour him and kill all his family. And this is what he said out loud. And I say this prayer in the worst of times and in the best of times. And next week I'm going to share something that happened to me in my life that was the worst of time. That turned out, well, it's not the best of time, but it definitely turned out that he worked it out for his good. And this is the prayer I use in times like that. Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides my path in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me. You are my rod and my staff, and you comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, CVB. We are out of time, but there is always time for a burning desire. This means if you intend to arm yourself with us, pick up a drink, please share it now. If you have any questions, which remain unanswered, please introduce yourself to someone after the meeting. We have passed the baskets in accordance with our seventh tradition, which states that every AA group is self-supporting, declining outside contributions.